that is oftentimes what people don't understand, is when we feel a certain way, it is because of what our soul is calling us to do, even if it doesn't make sense to the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Akashic Recordings. I'm Annette DeLue, Akashic Conduit, Channel, and Spiritual Guidance Coach.
And I'm Julia Nalivaiko, storyteller and creative producer of conscious media content, such as this podcast. What you're about to hear is a real-life Akashic Records session with Annette and one of her clients, recorded with their permission. For privacy, their names have been changed, but everything else is real.
Stay tuned to the end of each episode, where we deep dive into subjects that come up throughout the session. Today's session is with Cynthia, who wants to know her life and soul purpose, as well as to get some clarity about the relationships in her life. If you have particular people that you would like to ask about, if you could just tell me their first names and your relationship to them.
I have a bum relationship with one of my brothers, and I'm kind of bummed about that, but being patient with that. And then I've been in a new relationship now for like 3 years. So to me, I absolutely feel like he's my soulmate.
Okay. So the first thing they're showing me, and this is interesting that they're showing it to me this way, but it is having to do with a past life. This is sort of an imprint that's resting in your root chakra, and you're screaming and you have your hands over your ears. So this is telling me that there's some sort of trauma in a past life that is having an effect on your stability, your feelings of home, your safety, your security, which that's what your root chakra represents. What's interesting is that your root chakra currently, though, in your current life, looks pretty good. It's not like it is closed, it's open, it's bright, but it's like there's this shadow over the chakra, which is representative of this previous lifetime. So once you're aware that this previous lifetime happened, it's going to help you to move through it, because what I'm seeing is that whatever this was that happened, you've been having over the course of your lifetime, you've been having dreams about it. You've been almost like having visions of it and not really understanding what it was. And so this is going to give you context. It's going to help you understand where this is coming from. And then it'll help you to then move through it, and it will stop popping up in your energy field.
That's interesting.
Okay. So then let's move that energy down into your third eye, to your throat chakra, and all the way down into your heart space. Connecting us to that Gaia energy, keeping us grounded to this earth plane while we access the Akashic records. I want to thank Akula, my Akashic guide, for being here. I want to thank Archangel Metatron and Archangel Sandalphon for being here as well. We are opening up the Akashic records. They want to actually talk about your current partner first. Okay, so have they had past lives together? They have. Okay. They have not had very many, but they have had a few. Okay. Is he part of her soul family? He is not. Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you understand what soul family is?
No, I've never heard of that term before.
Not every soul goes through this, but most souls that are here on this planet break off from divine source energy. Almost like if you can imagine like an atom and you have like a nucleus and that nucleus splits, it's kind of like that. It's like it splits off from divine source energy and becomes an individualized soul. And oftentimes what souls will do is that they will break off from divine source energy in a group. And, you know, let's say that's maybe between 200 or 300 souls, and sometimes more, sometimes less. And all of those souls have a similar life and soul purpose. They're all sort of working on the same thing. So let's say they all decide to work on unconditional love, or they're all working on forgiveness, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. Just because somebody is part of your soul family doesn't necessarily mean that they're amazing in your life. It means that maybe they have come in to help you learn a lesson. So they may actually be a villain in your story. So that's what soul family is. And I like to ask that question simply because it gives us context for your relationship together. So just because he is not part of soul family doesn't mean anything from the standpoint of it being positive or negative. It just means that you're not working on the same thing energetically, from a soul level. Okay. But let's take a look at why they wanted to address this first. I'm hearing he is here to help you and you are here to help him with your spiritual growth. Together, you have different perspectives and different ways of approaching life. And you're here to show each other that even though you approach things in different ways, that you can be really talking about the same concepts or the same things, but approaching it from a different angle.
100%.
Are there any past lives that you want us to look at between them? Yes. Because there are times when things can get either confusing or there can be misunderstandings. And the reason why that happens is because they are looking at the same thing from two different points of view. So we would like to have her adjust her point of view so she can see the bigger picture in all frames of time and space. All right, well, let's take a look at the lifetime you want to show us. Are we looking at just one? Yes. Okay. So I'm seeing in this previous lifetime, it wasn't that long ago. Was it the lifetime just before this one? No, two lifetimes. Okay. They're showing me two points on a globe and you're at one point and he's on the other and he's literally on the other side of the globe. I'm getting that he was Japanese. In this particular lifetime, you were American. He traveled to America when he was a child with his family. You didn't meet until you were much older. You met when you were adults. So he had already had a significant amount of time to get adjusted to the country. He spoke English perfectly. You were fascinated by him because he was so different from everything that you were used to. You grew up in the American Southwest. He lived in a city, a larger city than what you were used to. You met him while you were in the city getting supplies for the ranch that you were working on at the time. You couldn't be more opposite. You were very grounded, very down to earth, working with livestock, horses. You loved them. They're like they were your own, even though you worked on this ranch, but it was more like family. He was a business person. He worked in a bank. He was very much about success and money and material things. When you came together, you broke down the stereotypes of what each of you represented. It's like your energy fields mixed together and brought out the best in both of you. You brought him more down to earth. He made you appreciate abundance more than you had in the past. He had a lot more money and you didn't really care about money at the time, but he helped you see that saving money or tucking away money for your later years was a good idea, things like that. It was just very practical information. You were friends for a while before you came together in a romantic sense. You were both single for a while. Most of the people that you came in contact with were at the ranch and they were all much, much older than you. You were the youngest person there. It made it difficult for you to find a husband. But that also being said, you weren't really looking either. It's not something that you ever really aspired to have. This was around the turn of the century, around the year 1900. When you finally came together as a couple, he almost dominated your energy. I'm seeing him almost tower over you because the busyness of who he was and the fact that he had this very prestigious job sort of took over your sense of peace and your groundedness that you had while just being on the ranch. So you spent more time in the city than you wanted to. And eventually you moved to the city because he had to be there for his job. You commuted basically back and forth to the ranch several days at a time. And each time you went there, you found your peace. And each time you went to the city, you felt like you lost your peace. It was something that sort of tore you up inside because you really loved him and you really wanted to be with him. But yet being in the city with him was really hard for you. One of the things he was trying to show you was that you could find peace in a city, even though there was a lot more action and a lot more things going on. You could, in fact, go within and find your own peace within yourself because this is something that he was really good at. Even though he was always busy and doing all kinds of things, he really did find a way to balance himself, to ground himself, and to find peace. This helped you understand that you don't just find peace where there is a peaceful place. You find peace within your heart, wherever you are. There can be chaos going on all around you. And if you have that peace in your heart, you carry that bubble of softness and of peace with you. And this is what he was here to show you in this previous lifetime.
It's nice.
Okay. So is there anything else that we need to know about that lifetime? No, not at this time. Okay, so I'm just wanting to ask what the reason is that you needed to know this information. So I'm going to ask the guides. The reason why we decided to give this information first and foremost is because it will set the tone for the story that she will be hearing shortly about her life and soul purpose. Part of what she is working on with her soul purpose is to be able to find calm within a storm. That is a problem that a lot of humans have, where they're not able to keep that state or to keep that calm when there is chaos going on around them. And that is why she has chosen him in this lifetime. That is why she has chosen him in subsequent lifetimes, is because this is something that they can work on together. It was important for her to choose someone who was incredibly different from her on a soul level as well as on a personal level. So therefore, she could grow and test the strength of how she can move forward in energies that could be more chaotic than she's been used to. Okay.
Yeah, I really enjoy hearing that because I've always felt like we were really different on a soul level. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're always told by society to like be the same on a soul level. But I feel like actually exactly like what you said, that when there's difference, then each person impacts the other person kind of deeper.
Yeah.
It brings that different perspective, because areas that I'm super strong, he has other areas that he's super strong.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like spot on.
Beautiful. And that helps you learn from each other, and you can sort of test your strength on various things that you're working on, things like that. So yeah, it's a perfect scenario for growth, because if you basically have somebody who is the exact same as you, it's not that you can't learn from that, but it's, you know, it's a little bit harder when you don't have that contrast.
Like you said at the beginning, he's pretty much doing the same thing, just going a different route. And so sometimes that makes me feel challenged because he's not on the same route. But then at the end of it, we look at each other and we're like, oh, we're pretty much saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's one of those things where I don't know why society says same goes with same. It's challenging to be with the same because you don't see the other side of the coin that often.
Well, and also the element of having the same energy is something that's talked a lot about in spiritual circles. And just because you have, let's say, the same energetic resonance, so let's say you have the same energetic frequency and on a soul level, you're aligned, that doesn't mean that you're exactly the same on a soul level, because you can be in alignment with somebody energetically, but yet still be two completely different types of souls.
Yeah. I guess I haven't really explored that yet and understood that, like, to that depth.
Okay, so let's move into her soul purpose. Okay. All right. So how many lifetimes do we need to look at for that one? Just two. They're saying to me that actually with these two lifetimes, we're going to get your life purpose as well. Okay, before we go into that first lifetime, they are showing me something quite interesting. So I'm seeing you as a soul. You're not incarnated yet as a human. You are basically doing a scan of the earth. I'm seeing your energy move around in like a circular fashion all around the entire globe. So it's like a very geometric way of moving. So it's like you're moving along the grid lines and all of the places all over the earth on the latitude and then on the longitude. It's like you've literally made a full grid over the entire earth. And this is something that you're exploring. And so as you're exploring, all of a sudden you see something that lights up on the earth and you realize that that is the place where you need to be in this next incarnation. And this is something you do in every single incarnation that you have. You do this earth scan and you look energetically to see where you need to be, where your energy needs to be, and you know exactly where you need to go. And so then you decide to incarnate in that space. And I've never seen it presented like this before. I've never seen a soul that does this before they incarnate. So this is something that is pretty new to me. So I'm going to ask the guides why that is something that you're doing. You'll find out once we cover her soul purpose why this is important, but she does have to be in very specific places on the planet at very specific times. it is important for her energy to be where it needs to be at exactly the right time and exactly the right place. It sets the tone for the incarnation for her. Okay.
When you say these things, like one thing that just keeps coming to me is I never want to be in one place. I've always felt like in my heart, like I can't be in one place too long. Like there's too many people and too many places that I need to see and experience. And I think it's really interesting because my parents have always said that about me growing up. I want to be different places, do different things. And that's how I've always been super different, according to my family, is that I'm a wanderer. And I just truly have always believed that, you know, I need to be where I need to be. People that are born and raised in the same place and stay. For me, I just can't do that. It just doesn't feel right for my spirit. I can just feel when my time is up somewhere. And I'm just like, it's not like it's bad. Like it's up, something bad happened. But it's just like, it's time for me to go find new people, a new tribe, impact in a different way, challenge myself, try something different.
And that is part of your soul signature, is this ability to move from one place to the next and have an effect on the energy there. So when they were saying that when you're doing the earth scan, they're going to show us the lifetime where you first incarnated on earth. What that tells us is that you actually originated in another place. So you did not originate on earth. You came here after Earth had already been established and people were already on the Earth. And you came in here, you scanned the Earth, you looked at a particular place that you needed to go. And it was like that place lit up and you knew that that was the place where you needed to land first. And what that did for you, because what I'm seeing is that it's an energetically clean place where you were born. And when you incarnate in an energetically clean place for you and for your soul, what that does for you is it gives you an anchor point. It gives you an anchor point for your energy. And that's why it was important that you start off in a particular place, because it sets the tone for the entire lifetime of what your energy is going to do and where you're anchored. So even though you leave the place where you were born, you are still sort of anchored to that energy, and it helps you to be in other energies that may not be as supportive. It is something that you have done since your inception here on Earth, where you will go from place to place to place, and you will help heal not only the Earth grids, so the Earth itself, Gaia herself. So that is also called a grid worker. That is a particular type of light worker that there is. The grid work is actually not your main job. That is just something that you naturally do as a soul. I'm seeing in this first lifetime when you were incarnated, I'm seeing that you were paving the way for other souls to be able to thrive in a particular place. So you go to a particular place, you energetically clear the place of what was there and what had happened before. And it allows a much more supportive energy for the people who are coming in after you. So when you feel like your time is up, it is because you have done your job. You've done the clearing that you were meant to do. And if you stay there much longer after the clearing is done, it's almost as if your energy gets a little bit depleted because you need to be able to move forward into the next place so you can clear that energy as well. The first lifetime that they're showing me, which was your first incarnation on Earth, I am seeing you in what would be considered now, I guess it would be in Africa. And I'm seeing you, you're a man and you have this wooden staff that you're carrying with you and you're aligning it with the stars. And I'm seeing you push energy through the staff up to the stars and down into the Earth. It's like you're actually taking the energy from the stars and then putting it into the Earth and then allowing that star energy to heal the Earth where you are. So a lot of this work that you do is done on the subtle realms. It's not something that you're consciously doing on a regular basis. Now, when you're sleeping, you may notice that you travel a lot. So astral travel is part of what you do. Even if you're staying in one spot, your soul actually goes off and sort of starts the clearing work ahead of you going wherever you're going to go. There are times when you don't actually need to go there, that your soul is able to do the work remotely. And I'm seeing you in this first lifetime, you're sitting in a meditation and you're doing this remote viewing and it's raining all around you. There's a storm. It's like flooding. It's like literally chaos. and you do not notice it at all. You're in your center, you're in your space of meditation, and you're doing your energetic work that you need to do. And it's like the outside forces are not affecting you in any way. You pick up some sort of, maybe it's a shell. Is it a shell? It is. Okay. And there's something inside, and you shake it and you hold it up to your ear. You know it's meant for somebody. And so you reach out your hand and you hand it to this person. The person grabs it and kind of looks at it and sort of looks at you puzzled and doesn't really understand why you're handing it to them. Why is that significant? She is handing this other person this shell, and it's not the shell that is being handed. It's actually what is in the shell. They are three seeds that got caught in the shell. The seeds will help this man grow food for him and his family. When she handed the shell over to the other man, he shook it and still didn't understand. It took him two seasons to realize what had been given to him. Two seasons of his family starving because they were short on food. Once he realized what had been given to him, he gave immense gratitude to the man who gave him the ability to continue living. So it's like you have the foresight to know what somebody needs in any given moment, even before they know what they need. You know how to unravel that for them and help them in every way possible, even though they don't know that that help is needed. You, as a soul, are someone who is preparing. You move ahead and prepare for what is to come. You help people prepare for what is to come. You help the earth prepare for the people that will be living in a particular space, clearing the energy so it is habitable for whichever souls are deciding to live there. You clear the way. You prepare the way for every person that you come across energetically and physically. Okay, that's really beautiful. And it looks like in this particular incarnation, you were very much alone, but it didn't bother you. I don't see that you have a family. You don't have anybody around you. And that was mainly because you were so nomadic in this first lifetime that like you didn't really feel like you had time for human connections. And because you were just getting used to being human, it felt weird to be connected to other humans because you weren't on the same energetic frequency as them.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting because I've never struggled being alone. And my parents always kind of said that to me, like, you don't struggle being alone. You seem like an old soul. I don't ever really feel alone because even if I'm physically alone, I feel surrounded. Even if I don't have somebody particular that I'm traveling with or with, I don't ever feel alone because I always feel like there's somebody that is around me, like energetically, that I can impact or have a great conversation with or learn from, you know? So I guess I just don't ever feel alone.
And that's exactly what I'm feeling in this previous lifetime as well. Like there was not a shred of sadness, not a shred of emptiness at all. It's just complete peace and harmony. It's not like you really needed to be around other people. You have gotten used to being around other people now. Keep in mind that this was literally your first incarnation on the planet. So it took you several lifetimes to really get into the groove of how to be human and then how to interact with humans. It was very different for you, the energy of this place. It's more akin to going to a really rough terrain after living in a very cush like beach community. If you imagine the previous planet that you were doing this for, it was much, much easier. This one was much more rugged, much more wild, and you had to really navigate and figure it out before you were able to really settle in.
It explains the thoughts and the feelings that I have now when I feel, I don't want to say an outsider, but I don't quite understand, you know, like when people make a big deal out of something or when something's stressful, or I connect with them with where they're at, but at the same time, I wouldn't handle the situation the same way. And so I guess I've always seen that like as a weakness, like a lack of, not a lack of sympathy, but a lack of connection on that level. And I feel like I beat myself up over that because I'm like, why can't I meet them where they're at? Even though to me, it's not a big deal. I view it as lack of empathy. I just can't meet them there. I feel like I see things very differently.
And that it goes along with the higher frequency of energy. Oftentimes, I will have conversations with my guides. And in the past, when I was going through the beginning stages of my spiritual awakening, I would say to my guides, like, don't you understand how hard this is? Some of them understand and some of them don't, because some of them, it's been a really long time since they've been to Earth, or they've never been to Earth. They're like, we don't understand why you're freaking out about this. It's not a big deal, right? It's just a lack of understanding of what it's like to be in that energy that the other person is in. To give you another analogy, which would be something that you would really connect with since you're a mom, they're showing me, like, if your two-year-old is having a temper tantrum, you wouldn't sit down on the floor and have a temper tantrum with them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So what you would do is you would actually be the calming energy in the room. You would let them tantrum and let them cry it out or do whatever they need to do. And then from there, you would communicate or try to communicate to them and see what is wrong or whatever it happens to be. So the communication part is key. So if you're feeling that you don't understand why somebody is responding the way that they're responding, asking them questions is going to be the best way that you can relate to them. You know, why is it that you're feeling this way? Do you know why you're feeling this way? Or whatever question comes to your intuition, that's going to be how you're going to connect.
Yeah, and I see that even in my parenting from when they were little, I was that parent that just did exactly what you just said. Mm-hmm. After they're done and after they're calm, sit them down and say, what's going on? How can I help you? Like, I don't ever match somebody's energy. If somebody's mm-hmm. yelling or aggressive, like, I've never been that type of person. And so that's it too, because I remember at the beginning, you said I'm a great communicator, but it's in those moments when he's feeling a certain way and I don't feel that way. Instead of just saying, like, I don't get it, I should just say, can you talk to me about that? Because that could be where I could most definitely grow. Maybe at that point, instead of him feeling like I don't meet him where he's at, he'll see that I just can't get there at times. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. One of the questions you can ask is you can ask him what it feels like to experience what he's feeling. So you can say something like, I don't think I've ever experienced anything quite in the way that you're describing. So can you explain it to me if you feel that you want to right now, if you want to talk about it? Can you explain to me what it is you're feeling and why?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to the second lifetime for your soul purpose. Your soul signature, it's interesting because every soul has sort of like either a more on the divine masculine side or divine feminine side, or sometimes it's pretty balanced. Your soul has more of a masculine resonance to it. And in this lifetime, they're showing me you are a man and you are incredibly confident. It is many lifetimes after that first incarnation on Earth. And I'm seeing you literally like almost strut down the street that you're walking. And it's in this energy of that you've kind of mastered being human. You've kind of mastered the experience of being on this Earth. And you're really happy about it. You're just really pleased with yourself. You're very happy that you've been able to like keep your balance, keep your center, and do the job that you came here to do as a soul. And then I'm just seeing like a smack in the face coming. So like you're super confident and super ready. And then now it was like, okay, cool. So you've mastered that. Now it's time for the next lesson. And so you weren't expecting it to come this quickly. You expected that you'd be able to hang out in this energy of accomplishment for a bit longer than you did. And that certainly did not happen. So as soon as you got to that confidence level, basically the universe was like, okay, great. You're ready for the next phase. And you're like, wait. No, I didn't want to do it that quickly, you know? So
like, that's the story of my life. I feel like, oh yeah, I really understand that I need to work on that I can meet that, get in my routine, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, here's another thing. I'm like, no, wait, hold on, too fast, too much.
Yep.
But it's interesting because I've always chalked it up, like that masculine energy that I have, to the fact that I only have brothers and I only have sons. But it's interesting to hear it like from the past, because I've always been like, you know, people will definitely say that about me, that my energy is more like that. Even females, I guess they would say intimidating, but I'd always be like, I think maybe it's just because I had brothers growing up and because I have sons now. But it's cool to hear it from a different angle.
Well, and the overpowering energy it is rooted a little bit in the divine masculine energy of your soul, but not entirely. It's more just literally the overall energy of your soul is pretty big. So when people find you to be either overwhelming or I'm just hearing the word big, like big energy, like that's just the nature of your energy and that's what they're feeling. So it really has nothing to do with you as a human and any actions you're doing on your human level. It just has to do with your energy and how big it is. And because it's a very pure energy, you have this really incredible ability to keep your energy very, very clear. And it's by design because you are a transmuter. And so you really move through the spaces that need to be cleared rather quickly. And because of that, you do need to keep your energy quite clear. All right. So then what was this next phase of her soul purpose? Okay. So it is actually the first phase was you being able to do your soul work on a particular level. They're showing it to me like stair stepping. So the first level was at the top of the stairs. And then each stair that you go down is you getting deeper and deeper entrenched in your humanness. So the next phase was simply trying to accomplish the same job that you just finished, but being more and more ingrained into the human experience. So with each phase, you have been more and more grounded into the human experience. That is the challenge. The challenge is being in that space of having to deal with the normal day-to-day human things while still doing this job effectively.
I feel that like every day. I feel like kind of being pulled between like the two where I want to be in the normal life, but I don't. I want to want what everybody wants, kind of like keeping up with the Joneses, but in my true like heart space, you know, I'm like, I don't want any of that. I don't even want a car. I don't want a cell phone. I just want to be like a nomad. And it's interesting because a while ago I did Reiki with my girlfriend. We just decided to go to a couple Reiki trainings and just kind of feel it out and see, because we were yoga instructors, just to kind of see what it's all about, like with pure intention. And I just checked in completely to like, I guess who I'm really like supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And some like amazing moments happened throughout training. And it was really cool because it just came so, so natural. But then when I step out of that and I step into like mom, working a lot of hours, like taking care of a house, I feel like I'm not who I am. It's really interesting that you say that to me because I do feel like kind of pulled back and forth between the two. And I feel like me when I'm the total opposite of probably everybody.
Yeah. One of the things they're showing me is that part of the reason why you had children in this lifetime is because you needed to be grounded in the human experience. Because if you didn't, you would not actually be in the human experience. In order to do the job that you're doing effectively, which is pave the way for people and the sort of energy that needs to precede what people are going to be moving into, especially during this incredible rapid ascension that's happening on Earth, you need to be able to understand what people are going through and why. In previous incarnations, you didn't necessarily understand that.
Well, yeah, I still struggle with that now.
And that's why you incarnated the way that you did in this lifetime. And they're showing me many lifetimes in this phase of your growth. You have incarnated and been a mother because it is the best way to tie you to this earthly plane.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I mean, I think that's where I'm at too now. A question that I've always had is, I feel like I've always wanted more kids. That's been heavy on my mind and on my heart. You know, if I don't even know if I'm asking that properly or what's the proper way to say that. But I've tethered between both because I feel like being a mom is probably the best thing I do. I don't know how to explain that in an earthly manner. I mean, I'm a great employee, but that's just, you know, you just have to be. But as far as being a mom, that's my... Exactly like you said, I know that's why I'm here for sure. A lot of people ask me, oddly for parenting advice because they meet my boys or they see me interact with my boys and they love our connection.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted four. Like, it's interesting. I journaled growing up and I always said that I was going to have four and I always wanted four. And do I have more to learn to do it all over again? Like, do I need that? Do you see anything like that? Or is that not even something that I can ask?
Yeah, you can certainly ask that. I'll take a look. And also the reason why other people look to you for parenting advice is because this is your sole purpose, which is paving the way. You pave the way not only for children, but then also for other people. So that's just your natural talent. So let me check in to see if you have any souls on the other side waiting to be your child. Just hold on a second. Okay, so I'm seeing 1.5 souls. And why is it a half? Okay, so you have two souls on the other side that you were soul contracted to have. Okay, so meaning that it was in your soul plan to have these other two children. The one child, or the one soul, I should say, the reason why they said 1.5 is because that soul at this very moment is in the process of renegotiating the soul contract because they want to incarnate pretty much now-ish. And it doesn't look like that's going to happen in the time frame that soul wants to be here. So they might actually decide to incarnate with another family, but the other soul is still solidly in your energy field in terms of soul contracts. It is your choice whether or not you have another child, but you do have the opportunity to have one because there is a soul that is soul contracted to do so. They want me to reiterate to you that it's not a sad thing if you decide not to, because basically the soul will just decide to choose a different family if that's the case. So what they're showing me is that the reason why there was the difference between the two sets of children is because the one set is for the, you know, sort of earlier part of your life. And then the second set was going to be for the later part of your life because of the child connection, keeping you grounded to this earth plane. You could, in fact, just continue on the rest of your life and just be up in the spiritual realms, but you're going to be continuing to go further and further away from the human experience when that happens.
So it seems like I need more grounding.
Yes. And that's what children offer you, is the grounding. And then you also learn from them by helping them pave the way. So it is your choice. It is an opportunity that is there for you.
Yeah, it's so interesting because when I had chatted maybe like a year ago with about having a family, I kind of started thinking about why I feel like I would want more. Literally his words were like, why would you feel like you would want more? And I said, just to keep me here, earth purpose, because 6 years, once the boys are gone, I'm like, I don't know, I could lift off the ground. You know, I just feel like I did my work. You know what I mean? I don't know. You know?
Yeah, that's exactly what they were showing me, is that the second your boys are out of the house, like, you're just going to go out into the spiritual realms and that's where you're going to live. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's so fun. Yeah, like, maybe I could do more on the groundwork. Like, I see myself go to another country and live in a hut and like try to impact and inspire other people, like a tribal mom, help raise kids, but they're not mine. You know, maybe go do orphanage work. Like, I'm always driven to people indefinitely, but it's either like older people or younger people, nobody my age. But, you know, I have had a lot of people, you should do coaching for parenting or coaching for healthy relationships. Like, that's where I see you doing your work. Like, and it's so weird that I said that and then this is coming about, because I said either I begin again or I do something different, and it's all going to be only working to pay for my food. Like, and I'm going to be out in other countries just trying to connect and help and love. But I can't do it here. Like, I just can't do it here. I mean, I do things here and I get my kids involved in things here, like feeding people on the streets. Like, we do things local and it's great. But I'm like, I just can't be here unless I'm starting again.
Yeah.
And it's weird that I said that. And it's interesting because he didn't understand. He's like, I don't get it. You know, and he's like, it sounds like you're going to really struggle with like emptiness. And I'm like, I don't know, because I know that the boys are going to be good and I want them to grow and to spread their wings because they're so smart and capable. So I don't think so. But It's just that I don't have any more purpose like here, but I didn't want him to feel like, well, then what am I? Because I didn't mean it like that. I don't mean it from a bad spot. I just mean it as like, I don't know. Like, I really don't know what that looks like.
Yeah. And if you feel comfortable enough doing so, it would help him to understand if you shared this recording with him. And even if it's just a portion of it, just helping him to understand, because it's not an empty nest syndrome type of energy. It is simply that your soul, okay, imagine it like a balloon. So your soul is like a helium balloon. And if it's not tethered to the earth, it's just going to float up and there's nothing that's going to stop it. And that's basically what your energy would do without being sort of tethered to the earth. That's what your natural propensity is to do.
When I hear that, I'm like, do I need to? Am I nothing if I don't have that that connection? Like, or can I just be out, grounded, but out? You know what I mean? I always told my parents, I think I was like 12. They told me that I needed to grow some roots because they always said that I was like a hippie. I said, I have a lot of roots. I'm just in a pot and my pot can be put anywhere. And my parents are like, what in the world? Like, these conservative Christians, like, what have we done wrong? Like, you know, but I have a lot of roots. Like, actually, I don't feel ungrounded, but I feel like an outsider. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But when I feel the most inside is definitely when I'm with older people talking and serving, or with younger people talking and serving. But I do struggle with people that are my age. I feel like, I don't want to say boring, but I feel a hard time connecting because I don't have that level of connection with them that maybe they're used to. So I don't know. But yeah, that's really interesting. I want to circle back to that question. Like, is it bad to not be quote unquote grounded like here?
It's not good or bad. It's just what you signed up for in this experience. The one thing you can know about your life purpose is that you're always guided in your life purpose. So everything about your experience is going to point you to what you're meant to do. The very fact that you were saying, I want to have another child or another couple of children. And if I don't, I want to go work in orphanages, or I want to go do this or do that. That is telling you that you are clearly guided to those particular experiences for a reason. And those experiences are there for you to be able to help you really ground into the human experience. Now, what your mom was talking about with you being grounded, like roots being grounded into the earth, it's different than being grounded into the human experience. And let me explain why. Being grounded into the human experience means that you're in your body, that you are functioning as a human in terms of doing human things, as opposed to always being in the other realms, always being in meditation, always being in astral projection, always, you know, traveling in that way. There are things that you have said that you've experienced where when you get into that space and that mode of humanness, it is something that you can do while being in the present moment and being happy doing it. But then you're also happy when you're not doing the human things. So it's not necessarily about what is aligned for you and what isn't. It's about what you did sign up for. And so your life purpose in this lifetime is to master the ability of going back and forth between the two worlds, between the human world and the spirit world, without missing a beat. Because in the past, what I've seen is that throughout the course of your previous lifetimes, you have either been fully rooted in the human or fully in the spiritual, but then not necessarily being able to navigate between the two easily. It's very difficult for you because of the high frequency of your energy for you to go back and forth between the two without having significant effect, let's say. Okay. Again, it is your choice whether or not you decide to have another child or whether you decide to put that energy into, you know, helping the elderly or helping children. But the reason why you gravitate towards children and the elderly is because both ends of the spectrum are paving the way. You're paving the way for the end of life. You're paving the way for beginning of life.
Mm-hmm. And I feel that. I like how kids live not so deep, you know, they're not so affected by the earthly things. Mm-hmm. And they're just childlike. I love that. But then I love the depth of somebody that's older, where they're like, they can see the light at the end of their tunnel. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so they have a different depth of experience. And then kids have a different depth of non-experience. And I like both. And the middle is where I struggle.
And that's the overall lesson of this lifetime. So it's not just balancing the humanness and the spiritualness, but it's balancing that in between. And that is what you're here to master. And so from that perspective, it is up to you as to what the best way is for you to navigate that and find that balance within that soul purpose that you have. So they're saying to me that you can journal on this. Do you do automatic writing at all?
I've never heard of it.
Okay. So automatic writing is, as I've been doing throughout this session, is, you know, I've been channeling what the guides say. So automatic writing is channeling, but in written form. And oftentimes you can connect to your guides. And then if you go into a meditation, close your eyes and just get into that beautiful state of groundedness and then connecting into your guides. And then you can ask them to give you messages or guidance, if you will. And typically what I'll do when I do automatic writing is that after I'm in a nice meditative state for a little while, I will literally just start writing. So I won't actually think about what I'm writing. I'll just let my hand write. You can try that and get some of the messages that are aligned for you and keep record of them. After you get the messages, you can sort of let them go and then revisit them every couple of months to just sort of read them and see what's come up for you. Okay.
Yeah, I can work on that.
They're saying it's something that you'll benefit from. You'll really enjoy doing it as well.
Okay.
The last thing, I guess, would be your brother. I'm hearing his soul say to me, she chose me. She chose the most human she could have ever possibly chosen as a brother. And you did that on purpose. Okay. So you asked his soul to join you in this experience for this lifetime. You don't know his soul. You had never met him before. Basically, his soul was wanting to observe and learn from you. And you needed somebody to come into your experience who was very, very rooted in their humanness. And you needed to have that experience. It's almost as if you were saying that you're surrounded by men and you're surrounded by boys. And it's like, it's almost as if the circle of men is like your anchor and grounding points, and you're at the pinnacle of it. And it's not to say that your boys are really grounded into their humanness, because they're not. They're both of their souls are pretty elevated and they're actually pretty well advanced. It's just that the energy is all very similar in helping you to stay in this human experience.
Sure.
Beautiful. Okay. How do you feel?
Oh, I feel really good. And I completely enjoyed that. I feel more peaceful.
Oh, wonderful.
I guess it just feels like that somebody can like understand me mm-hmm. when sometimes you feel misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it always feels good to be validated, but it also feels good that like when I spoke about the way that I see things or feel things or experience things, that you're like, hey, that's okay. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I guess maybe to somebody to say like, I feel like torn and the only thing that keeps me here is my kids, it sounds sad. I don't mean it like that. It just means that like, I need to be here for them.
Mm-hmm.
But then once, you know, they've spread their wings and established themselves, like, what do I need to be here for? You know?
Right. Right.
And like, I guess maybe to somebody else, it sounds really depressing, but I don't mean it to be depressing. Like I could never say that to my parents. They would be like, we need to have like a sit down meeting, like, mm-hmm. you know, like they would really mm-hmm. think I've lost it when you hear that and you don't think it sounds strange. And even though I don't know you, like it makes me feel like, hey, that isn't strange. Like that's okay that I feel that way.
Well, and also it's because of the energy though. So
yeah.
When you were speaking and when you said that, I felt the energy of it. I wasn't necessarily listening to the words, although I was, but I was more listening to the energy of it. And the energy mm-hmm. of it had nothing to do with sadness or mm-hmm. despair or anything. It had mm-hmm. to do with, oh, okay, so I did my piece of mm-hmm. being grounded into my human, and now I have the opportunity to not do that anymore. And that feels mm-hmm. really good. And that's that decision point that you need to make as to like which direction you're going to go in. But you know, it feels 100% aligned with who you are as a soul. Mm-hmm. And that is oftentimes what people don't understand, is when we feel a certain way, it is oftentimes because of what our soul is calling us to do, even if it doesn't make sense to the people around us.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Okay, so I am going to close the Akashic Records. I want to thank Akula, my Akashic guide, for being here, giving us all the information that we needed today. And I want to thank Archangel Metatron and Archangel Sandalphon for allowing us access to the records today. The records are closed. The records are closed. The records are closed.
And a big thank you to Cynthia for sharing her session with us today. So Annette, this was a really good example of a session that I think to me shows how much the validation that a session can offer benefits people, in the sense that basically everything that you said to Cynthia, she really connected with, and every single element she was able to relate to something that happens in her life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get that more times than not, having that reaction of the connection to the information and really being able to see how it's playing out in their lives. Yeah.
Totally. So one of the first things that came up when looking at her soul purpose was that she was a grid worker, which I was quite happy that that came up, because I remember we had a discussion about the different types of soul purposes a while back on one of our earlier episodes. So it was cool to have, you know, a real life example of that. So what I'd like to get clarity on is, you say that she paves the way for people, that she prepares places energetically for what's to come. Conceptually, I can get my head around what that is, but on a more practical level, why does the way need paving? Why does the earth need to be prepared for something?
There are very few times in life that I will actually make a sports reference.
Thank God for that, because I wouldn't understand most of them.
Yeah, but I will make a sports reference now because it seems relevant for some reason. Have you seen a Zamboni before?
Have I not just said that I will not understand my story?
I mean, that's...
Is it edible?
No. I mean, it sounds like it could be.
It sounds delicious. Or it would love a Zamboni.
Or it sounds...
Is it filled with cream or custard?
It sounds also musical, maybe. Yeah. What a beautiful instrument, a Zamboni. So a Zamboni is the big machine that comes out and flattens out the ice before ice skaters come out. Or before like a hockey team comes out, you know, they come in, it melts the ice and makes it nice and smooth. So there's no chips or divots.
I'm so impressed that you know what that's called.
Well, I grew up in Detroit. Come on. Like Detroit is it's a hockey place, and it's almost like osmosis. Like you can't not know about hockey in Detroit. Kind of like if you were to live in Canada and not know about hockey, that would be weird. So it's very similar to that. It's like paving the way. If you can imagine, there has been some big atrocity that has happened on a particular piece of land or in a place on this planet. And over the course of time, nature has cleared the space, which nature often does. And then you're able to build upon that space and build something new energetically. That naturally happens, but that takes years and decades, possibly centuries, depending on what has happened in that particular place. When you have grid workers, it's like having little spot cleaners. They're going from place to place to place, doing a little energetic clearing in various different places that they go. And so there are a ton of grid workers out there. And basically, they're taking the earth grids, they're repairing them, they're cleaning them, they are upgrading them. And so that's another thing that they do too, is they upgrade them, they make them stronger, they make them better, they infuse them with different light codes, things like that. It's basically not only helping Earth with her ascension, but it's helping us as well be supported on our ascension journey. Because you and I were just talking about today how when you go to certain places and then you feel sort of not supported there anymore, not aligned there anymore. And there's a reason for that because, you know, everywhere on Earth, you've got different types of energy. As Earth herself is ascending and as we are all ascending, if the Earth grid sort of stayed the same, we would all be very, very uncomfortable here. It allows us to grow with Earth and with her ascension and makes it so we are able to harmoniously move forward on our path.
That makes sense, but I just realized a really basic question, which is what is an Earth grid?
If you imagine that you have the longitude and latitude lines on the Earth, right? Those are imaginary lines that we've sort of made up as humans. We've made these lines up so we can identify quadrants of places and where we are, locate where we are. Likewise, the term Earth grids is similar. It is more of a man-made term to help our brains understand what this means. So maybe it is that starting point of a grid around the Earth, but then it goes all the way up to the stratosphere and all the way down to the Earth's core and all the way around. So it's not just a flat plane, if you will, around the Earth. It actually is the entire Earth.
The energy field.
I mean, yes. So the analogy they're giving me is if you've ever seen what it looks like to look through like heat glasses, I don't know, like a spy movie, and they have some like random glasses that can see heat signatures, you know, and you see the hot spots and then you see the cold spots and then you see the things that are moving and the things that aren't moving, right? When you're a grid worker, you're basically looking at those hot spots. This is not necessarily consciously, of course, but you're looking at the hot spots and your soul is saying, ah, that's a hot spot that we need to repair that, or we need to fix that. Or that one over there, we need to upgrade that. So it's a living organism of energy within Earth and around Earth. So it's not just the energy field itself. It is the energy field in addition to what has happened on the physical surface or the physical portion of Earth that is having an effect on the energy field. So it's a tandem work that has to do with repairing the energy in the physical terrain, in the physical earth, as well as the energetic field. For example, I went to a place in Normandy and I was staying at this Airbnb. And in this little carriage house, there were 70 soldiers that were living there for over 90 days during the war. At one point, a bomb came through, bombed the entire carriage house, and the people who were in it died. Like all the soldiers had died. And I was staying in this place as an Airbnb. I felt not a single spirit. I felt nothing. There was no weird energy. There was nothing. And I was like, oh, that's really bizarre. Like normally in something like that, I would feel something really powerful or creepy or whatever, you know? And after talking to the owner, we found out that since the bomb happened, the carriage house stood vacant and trees grew inside the cabin. Not a single person lived in it. Nobody touched it. It stayed there for decades. Basically, it was nature that healed that space.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. So Cynthia was asking you, and she was not really certain if this is a question that she was even, let's say, allowed to ask, whether having more children was something that was in the cards for her, or whether that's something that she should be considering doing. And I can see the hesitation in that, because that does feel like a decision to be made for the individual based on their life circumstances and desires, etc. But as it turned out, you did say that they were two other children potentially waiting for her who had been soul contracted to her.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very interesting subject matter. We haven't talked about this before. We'd love to hear more about how children specifically are planned.
Let me start by saying we choose the time, date, astrological sign, all of the circumstances of our birth, all of them. That's the first part. The second part is, well, I should say it's my belief that we choose our parents. And that's what I've seen in the records so far. I don't think I've ever seen a client in which they haven't chosen a particular situation within the family. Now, they might choose their parents because of the ancestral line, because maybe they're helping to clear that. Or maybe they're choosing parents because those particular souls maybe want to learn from them. So they decide to incarnate with them, because there's no hierarchy, obviously, on the other side in terms of like, oh, well, if I'm choosing to be this person's daughter, then that means they're more advanced than I am. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Like, you could be angelic status and they could be just starting off in their life. You don't know. There are so many different factors that go into when we decide to incarnate, how, with whom, all of those things. There are so many factors, though, that are involved, that all of those things are kind of subject to change. So when I said that she had 1.5 souls waiting for her, and the reason why they said it was 1.5 was because one of them had possibly decided to move on to a different scenario because she was not moving forward. It was likely because it was coming to the point where maybe the astrological lineup was going to be not ideal for that particular soul to come in. Instead of choosing a different time to come, that soul probably just went and chose a different set of parents. So when it comes time to incarnate, and let's say all of the factors are aligned, once the mother has decided that that is going to happen, that the child is going to come into the world, then okay, perfect. And when I say decided, I mean on a soul level. It doesn't necessarily mean the human person, because as we all know, there are babies that pop up and there are surprises. When it comes to a situation where a child is waiting on the other side, and let's say the mother decides not to have children, it's not a big deal because that soul can go and find another scenario that works for them.
Can we expand on that a little bit more? You say that it's based on when the soul decides, like the mother's soul decides. I'm guessing that doesn't necessarily coincide with the moment that the human decides.
Correct.
Well, so then what happens if the soul has decided that they're going to go for it, but then the human's circumstances don't align to make that happen? Like, it just feels like there's so many variables, so many ways that it could go wrong. How is it all coordinated?
People have a lot of sex.
Wow, the birds and the bees conversation, finally. I've been waiting for this whole season for this.
Yeah. I mean, that's the bottom line. People have a lot of sex. So, like, you know, there is a pretty good chance that there's going to be somebody in the world that's going to be, you know, getting pregnant, and it'll be at the exact right time and the exact right circumstances and the right energy, the right, all of the things.
Okay. So, but let's bring an example into it. A child has chosen their parents, but the parents want the child, but can't get pregnant.
That's a very good question. From what I've seen so far, and I haven't done a ton of readings about this type of thing, but I have done a few, that often the reason why a woman might not get pregnant in the time that they want to get pregnant, let's say, it is because either the child that is waiting for them is either not ready, or they're choosing to be born in a particular time with a particular type of astrology or whatever it happens to be. And it depends on the soul contract that you have with that parent as to when that's going to happen. Several dear friends that I know who had a really hard time conceiving, but then once they had their first child, they had number two, number three, you know? So like, it is very much about timing. Now, unfortunately, it's hard for the mother because, you know, they're wanting to do something maybe sooner, and or sadly, there is the horrible collective consciousness of, oh, if you're getting pregnant after 30, it's a geriatric pregnancy. You're going to have so many risks. There are so many things in society that tell us, oh, well, you need to do this. You can't do that. And, oh, you should do this. And, you know, and it's such an individual journey for every single mother. And every single mother out there really needs to listen to their intuition and follow their guidance as to what is right for them.
We've all heard of people who have really, truly wanted and done everything possible, and it hasn't happened.
That is true. And the circumstances on that would vary from person to person, of course. I'm not going to say that it happens with every single person, but often that desire to have a child and then not being able to have a child, sometimes that can be something that you sign up for, because overcoming that grief and that pain of not having a child maybe allows you to help others through it. Maybe it's going to allow you to do something else completely different. There's a reason why over the course of history in religions, it was not customary for priests, nuns, monks to have children. And granted, I think the reasons probably got very distorted over the course of time. But I see it more and more now with a lot of women that I know who are on this spiritual journey that are choosing not to have children and didn't want to have children. And that's simply because for their life purpose, it would be incredibly difficult for them to achieve that while having children. I know for me, it became almost an impossibility for me to have a child from a very early age. I started having problems with reproductive organs and things like that. And I think that that was just my way of really preventing myself from having children. But that also being said, there's never been a moment in my life where I've been like, I really think I want a kid. Like, that's never crossed my mind. And actually, the thought of being pregnant to me, and I don't want this to offend anyone. I mean it as no offense, but to me,
creepy, isn't it?
It feels so creepy. Yeah, yes. Me too. I've never thought it as something like, oh, warm and nourishing and amazing. I've been like, oh, that sounds, yes, yes. That's exactly what I think of. And I'm like, oh, God, that sounds awful. Like, you know, and I know so many people are like, I'd love to be pregnant. And I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing for you. I'm so glad.
For you.
I would never, ever want to do that. So yes, I feel like we've gotten a little bit off topic. Right. But so, you know, we're talking about, is it possible that if you were meant to have a child that you would not have a child? And certainly, you know, that can happen. Just like, you know, anything can happen when we come down here. It's like the Wild West, you know, like.
But why would it happen? So you say that, for example, in the previous example you gave where you said if it doesn't happen at a particular time, it's because that child's soul is not ready. I mean, can't we just get another one?
Totally.
Like, isn't there a bunch of them? Like,
yeah.
If that one is not ready, can't another one come through? Like
100%.
Does the soul on the other side dictate the possibility of pregnancy on this side? Like, how does that work?
I mean, there's so many possibilities. So like you said, yeah, if you had sort of slated a couple of different souls to be your children, and let's say something changed, then there was another soul that came in and wanted to be a child for you, then yeah, that can certainly happen. I mean, I joke that it's like the Wild West, but it is a little bit like that. There's so many different variables and, as we're saying, like so many different factors that are involved, but it all just seems to orchestrate perfectly. And isn't that the way of the universe, though?
Yeah, but we want to know the ways of the universe. That's what this podcast is all about.
Right, exactly. But that's the thing, is that like, you you can't predict how something is going to happen or when it's going to happen, all of those things. It's the same kind of idea. It's that you can know in your heart that, let's say you're going to be a mom. You know you're going to have kids. You have this just feeling that part of your purpose in this life. It's not to say that you would be able to really predict, oh yeah, so I'm going to meet this guy and then, you know, we're going to get married on this day and then we're going to have a child 2 years later. And I mean, it's not as easy as that to sort of predict, obviously. So there are ways in which these things are planned, and it all gets done before we incarnate. The plans have to be malleable and movable because of all of the willy-nilly chaos that we do down here. So the plan is relatively solid on the other side, and it is malleable, so it can move and change based on our decisions to a degree. And then there are the times when it's almost too far off the plan, in which case the plan needs to be changed midway. It's usually pretty solid that when there is a particular amount of souls that are sort of going to be your children, that will unfold the way that it's meant to unfold. Of course, if you, let's say, marry somebody different than you had anticipated marrying, which that certainly can happen, then that's going to be a reassessment. The children will reassess, okay, well, is this a father that we want to have? It's likely going to work because the energy that person is going to attract in a relationship is going to be very similar to the energy they would attract in the other person, right? Because we know when we date, we're attracting like energies, what we are attracting within ourselves or the things that we need to work on within ourselves. With that comes sort of having a similar experience. So when a child signs up to have a specific experience with a set of parents, they may be able to have that experience with multiple different people, just depending on the circumstance. Is it super nebulous? Yes. Is it super concrete? Yes. It's also very movable. So it's not something that I can really give you a, yes, it happens this way, it happens that way, and this is how you make a baby.
Damn, I was hoping to learn something in this podcast today. are the soul contracts between the like parent souls and the child souls, are they being made as we go? Like, for example, can a woman be already an adult woman in the 3D reality when her soul makes the decision that it wants to have a child and enters a contract? Or is it done pre-birth for each of us about the children that we are going to have? Like, when is that decided and how does that change?
For the most part, the contracts are going to stay the same in terms of, yes, I'm going to have two children, I'm going to have three children. And what can change is the souls that actually are meant to be there.
So it's like employees. You find the jobs and then you fill them.
Correct. Yeah, no, it's totally true. You are able to then sort of swap out as needed on a soul level. So it was the case with Cynthia as well, where she had these souls that were sort of on the other side slated to be her children. And that is part of the plan. So that was part of the sort of master plan, if you will. But now you can see that she's actually kind of deciding to maybe not have children. She's kind of on the fence. Who knows? She might change her mind in the future. But as of now, she's like, I don't know. So what happens to that second slot if, let's say, by some change of mind, she decides, no, I think I am going to have those two kids. So then somebody else, some other soul would come in and fill in that second spot. Now, you'll feel the difference in these changes, though, because especially if, like, let's say, for example, one of the children was supposed to be a member of your soul family and that member of your soul family decides to go and incarnate somewhere else, and then you get a different soul who's not your soul family. That's going to be a totally different experience. It'll still be an enriching experience. You'll probably get the same experience that you were meant to have and the child was meant to have, but it'll just be a different experience. Let's say if you have a child and you miscarry, the soul most of the time has not even been sort of infused into the body yet. So the soul is literally still waiting out on the other side going, all right, is that baby going to be viable or not? I've found that this has brought a lot of relief and a lot of solace to mothers who have miscarried. And I know that it's such a common thing and so many people out there do miscarry, that the soul of their child is actually not in there and that it is literally just a body of sorts. Their actual child, the soul, is just hanging out on the other side until the time in which the biological baby can be viable. And then once it's viable, the soul will come down and be like, yeah, cool. All right, now we're going to be infused together and that'll be it. And sometimes that might even not even happen until the day it's born. And so likewise, this is another controversial topic, but likewise for abortions, same thing. The soul's not going to connect with that particular body unless it knows that it's actually going to be born. Same kind of idea, which may bring solace to some people, might bring anger to others. You know, you never know how they're going to respond to knowing this information, but I feel like this information can only help.
Well, I think that the people that I would be concerned with helping would be the mothers who are going through this and the fathers as well, obviously. And I think in those particular cases, that information can only be helpful.
I agree.
What about couples that just cannot have children? I know you said that that could be the experience that they've signed up for, but then why give them this intense desire to? Because, I mean, that's the ones I'm talking about. I'm not talking about people who are choosing not to have them or, you know, are kind of either way about it. But and I feel like we often hear about people who are desperate to have children, and it's like the big drama of their life that they can't. Why would such an experience be created?
I can answer that question with a little snippet from my own life, which is something that I think I've talked about before, but it's worth repeating, that the only thing I've ever wanted in my whole life is a beautiful romantic partnership. And that is the one thing in my life that has eluded me my entire life. And why did I sign up for that? Why did I sign up for an experience that was so difficult for me to connect with another human on that level? Well, it's not a surprise that my sole purpose is to anchor unconditional love onto the planet, to help change the relationship template, to do all of these things. So why is it that my soul purpose and my life purpose are tied to something that I cannot have? Because I was meant to learn. Because I was meant to learn that you cannot put everything into one thing that you desire in this world. Because when you do that, you miss
everything else. All that time I'd been focusing on, why doesn't this guy like me? Why isn't this guy interested in me? Why can I not have that romantic relationship? Why can't I have a guy that looks at me like that? What was I missing all of those years? Just paying attention to what I didn't have. And that is a hard lesson to learn. The universe gives you what you focus on. So what was I focusing on? I was focusing on the absence of a romantic partner. So the universe kept on giving me an absence of a romantic partner because that's what I was focusing on. I had heard from so many different people, oh, it'll happen when you least expect it. When you stop focusing on it, that's when it'll happen. And my frustration and anger over people saying that to me, because I was like, that will never happen because it is literally the only thing I ever wanted. And now understanding the ways of the universe and understanding how this all works, I get it now. And I get why that needs to be the case, because you have to let go. It's the paradox that we often are faced with here. It's like you have to let go of the desire in order for the desire to show up, which is just insanity. But it's true. So for that couple who really wanted children, probably the reason why they didn't have children is because they were so focused on it. They were focused on the absence of a child. How many stories have you heard where you have somebody who has been trying? They give up. They say, that's it. Okay, I guess we're not going to have kids. And then boom, they're pregnant. Or I'm going to go and adopt. And they adopt a child and then they let go and then boom, they get pregnant. That's the reason why, is because their resistance is no longer there. So that's the other aspect of this that can change the plan. If you have such resistance, and I know that sounds bizarre to say that, because you would think, well, somebody who really, really wants children, that's not resistance, but it is. It is resistance to what is. And when you're in resistance, you're going to get more resistance. So the letting go allows you to stop being resistant, allows you to accept things coming in the way that they're meant to come in, and it allows the flow of energy to start again. And have I actually released that desire for the relationship fully? No. Have I released it 90%? Yes. Is that enough? Yes. So you don't have to release it fully, because I really do feel like in our human selves, it is a near impossibility to fully let go of something that you really, truly want, because there's always going to be that part of you that desires it. We are human. If we weren't, we would be little zombies, robots, you know, not actually having a human experience. So it's not like you have to be perfect in this letting go of it, but you do have to understand that, okay, if it's meant to be that I am to have a child, or if I am to have this relationship, or if I am to have this job, then I welcome it and I appreciate it and I accept it in the time that it's meant to happen. If you're able to get to that place and truly mean it, I don't mean just saying those words, because you can say those words until you're blue in the face and it doesn't matter, but you have to truly, truly, truly feel it and mean it on a soul level.
Ain't that the truth?
Didn't think I was going to go there, did you?
Well, I'm not shocked that you did. Everything you say, of course, resonates profoundly with me, and I'm sure with our listeners. It's just bloody annoying, isn't it? This is just one of the hardest things to do, to, you know, what you're talking about, to find that balance between what we desire, but also our unattachment to our desires. I mean, that is like a whole life's work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's related to having a child or the relationship or the job or whatever else,
mm-hmm.
in any case, finding that balance is, oof.
Mm. It is. It's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you found any hot tips on how to achieve this?
The first tip that I would say is to get to the place of understanding that you are whole and complete without whatever your desire is. That is the first major, major step. Now, you may have to take a bunch of little baby steps to get there, but that is the big thing that needs to happen, is the realization that you don't have to have this relationship, this child, this whatever, to be complete, to be whole, to be you. You're you on your own. You're you, complete, wonderful, fantastic, complicated in all the ways that you are. So once you're able to get to that space of accepting that you don't need this particular person, place, thing to make yourself whole, then it is about working with the physical, earthly desires. That's a little bit easier to work with than a core wound.
than a core feeling that you need this thing in order to be complete. Once you get to that space, then it's about retraining the brain to not constantly want this thing. It's sort of like training a pet to not always ask for treats, you know, because especially if you've been thinking about this your whole life, it's a constant habit. And so it's always good to ask yourself those questions, especially things that you've wanted for so long, because you don't know if you still want them unless you really, really dig deep and ask that question of your heart. And my heart said, I want connection. And whatever form that comes, to boil it down to the reason why you want to have whatever it is you want to have, that is the important bit too. Why do you want to have this thing?
That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. Because is it to make yourself feel better about something else in your life?
Mm-hmm.
Is it to make you feel better about yourself? Those are really good questions.
Or in my case, when I was asking myself that question, I was like, okay, well, what would I really want a partner for right now?
To take care of your taxes, no?
Yeah. Take care of French administration, BS. To be there when I cry, when I have to take care of it. To support me when, you know, I'm in those moments of having a bad day or, you know, crisis or something like that. Just somebody just to be there to...
So basically a personal assistant is what you're in the market for.
Well, and so, and then the next thing was a travel partner, right? So personal assistant may not support the whole travel, but you know.
Well, if you pay them enough.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I really kind of looked at, okay, so the physical reasons why I would want somebody around. That's the brain talking, right? So basically like those are the 3D mind things. It's like, oh, I want somebody to be there for me for this. And I want da 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 da. Okay. When I asked my heart was like, connection. You want connection. And that's the bottom line. So knowing your why you want something. Those would be my sort of tips for getting to that place. When you boil it down to something like that, okay, well, connection, I can get that anywhere. I can get the connection with any number of my friends, with my family, with some random person walking down the street. You can have an exchange and have a connection. Now, granted, in the romantic sense, that takes it to another level. And of course, that's something that I do still want. But is it something that I truly, truly need right now for my life to be 100% complete? No.
That's very good advice. And I think it helps to break it down into those smaller steps because, yeah, as we talked about it earlier, to have a detachment from your desires, which is something that you've desired your entire life, is a very distant concept. But when you break it down into those smaller things, it becomes a little bit more achievable.
Yeah, it becomes a little bit more palatable because when you first say it, it sounds like absolute madness.
Exactly. Exactly. How can I not want what I want?
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There was one other thing that I just wanted to bring up from the session, which I thought was really beautiful. I don't remember the exact quote, but you said something like, the universe conspires to help us achieve our life purpose. So in the sense that whatever particular purpose we've incarnated with, everything around us will try and guide us in the direction of achieving it. I love that. I think it's a beautiful concept, but I would love to make it a little bit more concrete with maybe some examples of how that happens.
It is very much about the template that we create before we come here is constantly moving and changing based on what we do. So in that respect, it is conspiring to allow us to succeed in this plan. Okay. So a really simple example would be signs. The universe is constantly giving us signs of things to conspire to put us in the right place at the right time and do the right things, whatever we have to do. It has been my experience that if I'm not getting the signs or if I'm not understanding the signs, they will get louder and louder and louder and louder until the universe is like, oh my God, will she just get it already? That's part of the nudging and the molding and the moving me so I can actually move into that template. If you imagine the template as being a map, and let's say right now I'm completely off the map, all of those signs are kind of nudging me back onto the map. And maybe the signs nudge me back onto the map, but I'm not quite on the path yet. I'm not quite on the on the trajectory yet, but maybe there's somebody else that can do that. So then maybe you give me a call and say, hey, Annette, do you want to go to this thing with me over here? And I'm like, yeah, why not? You know, I'll go over and do that thing with you. And somehow I end up meeting somebody, or somehow I end up talking to somebody who needs a session, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So the conspiring, it's not just our guides and the universe conspiring with us. They use the people around you too. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten messages from you and from my mom and my sister and Tina and all kinds of friends. It's a constant thing that the universe is always doing, because it is the strongest pull. It is the strongest pull to what we are meant to do. It's actually, weirdly enough, hard for us to pull away from what our soul plan is. That's why our lives get really super hard when we pull really far away from our soul plan. We make it harder on ourselves by pulling away. It's actually easier to be on the path.
Is the differentiation that I want to make, or I want to see if you can make, is about fulfilling life purpose versus just being happy, right? So our life purpose does not, as far as I understand it, does not necessarily always lead to happy, joyful experiences.
Not necessarily, no.
Oftentimes, from what I know so far from the sessions, from the experiences of talking to you, oftentimes our purpose can be quite difficult. Like mm-hmm. It can be about traversing some very tough times, trauma, transmutation, all kinds of hard experiences, basically. But ultimately, that is what we have come here for in that particular incarnation. So all the signs of your life will be taking you in the direction of creating those experiences for you, right?
Yep.
Which I think sometimes for us ends up feeling like, you know, punishment, like where did I go wrong that this happened to me and all that kind of stuff. But in fact, these are the experiences that we had oftentimes originally signed up for.
When we are off our path completely, things start to get really, really hard overall. When we are on our path, but let's say we've chosen something that is challenging. When I say when you're on your path, it gets easy, because it's not easy. It's more smooth in terms of how you go through whatever it is you go through. Like, it's clear you are meant to go through this and there's no turning back. In addition, you are supported in going through whatever this thing is. I don't know how many times I've been through this, but it's been a lot, where I might be going through one of the worst pains, grief, whatever it is, of my life. But somehow, all my finances are just perfect. Somehow, I have a ridiculous amount of friends that I love and care about here in a city that I just moved to only 5 years ago, where people struggle to find friends in that amount of time in this city. And I see it all the time. Have I gone through some really rough times here? Yeah, of course I have. But I have been fully supported in it. So I think that's how you can tell the difference between, am I just mucking up the whole thing and my life is, like, you know, taking a nosedive? Or am I on a path that is supported and smooth, even if it might be challenging and tough? Can you relate to that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. That makes perfect sense. All right. That's all the questions I have today.
Okay.
Is there anything that you want to add that we haven't covered?
You know, there was something that I was connecting to when I was listening back at the session. And it was something that you and I discussed last time we were recording, which was how much it related to my life. When I listened to the beginning of the session, and the message was about appreciating where you are and loving where you are, I was like, really, universe? Really? Like, you giving me this message again? And it's so funny that it's so very meta for me to be getting my own messages from my own mouth months later in the exact time that I need them. Like, how weird is that?
Amazing.
Oh my God. But yeah, I mean, and that's certainly been the case the last couple of sessions that we've edited, and where I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, here I'm hearing my own voice talk back at me. And obviously it's not to me, it's to the client, but it's like, it's a message directly for me. And I'm like, wow, cool. All right. I got to tell you, it's hard to listen to yourself.
Especially when you're giving yourself the advice that you don't want to take.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly.
That circles back beautifully to what we were just saying before about the messages will come in whatever form, from whatever direction in whatever timing they need. And yeah, perfect example of that.
100%. And they'll always come in a way that you do not expect.
Like from yourself.
From yourself. From the past into the future. Yeah, it's pretty masterful. It's masterful how the universe crafts this stuff.
It is mind-boggling.
And you only need to open your eyes to see it. And this is the thing. This happens to everyone every single day. And if you tell me that it doesn't happen to you, it's because you're not paying attention. Start paying attention to what is going on within your heart, within your energy, within your physical day-to-day life, and start questioning, like, why is this happening at this time? And dig deep within and you'll find the answers.
It's a promise from Annette.
I mean, I the thing is that I heard the message to myself that I need to love where I am right now, and I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
Not there yet. Still working on that. That's been a theme for the last several weeks for me, actually. So it's not something that I, you know, just heard. So it's like, oh yeah, okay, there's that message again. I keep on getting that message over and over again. So that, I guess that's going to mean that if I don't heed it, I might get a nice smack up the head at some point, but I'm hoping not. So yeah, I need to work on the loving where I am, no matter where I am, no matter what's going on.
I also think that's one of the key pieces of advice available to us in the whole world, in the aim of living our best life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weirdly, it's not easy to do.
It's just as the other one we discussed. It's two of the hardest, two of the seemingly most straightforward, yet two of the hardest things to achieve.
Agreed. So baby steps, work in progress. Don't expect perfection from yourself. Just do the best you can in every single day.
As we do with this podcast. On that note, thank you very much. And until next week.
Until next week. If you would like to get in touch with either Julia or myself, feel free to head to my website at infinitesoullove.com. You can also follow me on all social media at infinitesoullove1111. And that is on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Thanks so much, and see you next week.